Good afternoon. We are here for argument on Baz v. Patterson, 23-3407. Mr. Schaefer-Goddard, whenever you're ready.
May it please the court, my name is Jonathan Schaefer-Goddard, and I appear on behalf of the respondent appellant, Mr. Patterson. As this circuit has recognized, the Hague Abduction Convention is fundamentally an anti-abduction statute, an international effort to deal with the vexing problem of child custody when more than one country is involved. It is an anti-forum shopping convention. It operates by returning the child to the forum presumptively best suited to resolve the custody dispute. But when the forum in which the party's custody dispute is to be determined has already been decided by the parties, as is the case here, and has been fixed in the state where the petition is brought, as is the case here, then there is no role left for the convention.
But let me question an assumption that you just made in this statement. That assumption is whether it is up to the parties to designate a particular forum. I know you rely very heavily in your briefing on the stipulation that the parties have, but as you well know, stipulations don't bind people who are not part of the agreement. The stipulation was between the two parents, the mother and the father. The stipulation did not include the child, number one, and the stipulation did not include the court, most importantly. And there are lots of cases that say stipulations can't bind third parties, particularly the court.
So I distinguish between the stipulation as to habitual residence. What I'm focusing on here is the exclusive jurisdiction agreement.
But I'm not sure that under the Supreme Court's precedence that that is for the parties to stipulate. We also have a fairly long line of authority saying that parties can't stipulate to jurisdiction.
It's not a stipulation to jurisdiction. The court in question, the Circuit Court of Cook County, Illinois, had jurisdiction, had exercised it over the parties, over the child, since very shortly after the child
was
born.
No, I understand that the Circuit Court of Cook County, of course, has jurisdiction over domestic relations matters, but we're talking, as you stressed, about the convention. And the question that I see is whether the Hague Convention allows the parties to make this fundamental decision about habitual residence, which is what the authority of a court to act rests on. You know, reading Manaski against Tellieri, I'm not sure you're right that this is a private ordering subject.
So I want to focus on the exclusive jurisdiction agreement, which is to do with custody rather than the Hague Convention. And those are very distinct concepts.
Of course, they're quite
now,
different.
Because the parties have agreed where custody will be resolved, that amounts in our submission to a waiver of the right of return under the Hague Convention.
But I've never seen a case waive. I mean, the whole point of the Hague Convention, as I read Manaski, the parties could stipulate to a jurisdiction that's not the child's habitual residence, could stipulate to a jurisdiction that wasn't in the best interest of the child. I mean, I read Manaski as saying that it is up for the court to evaluate all of the factors. They say multiple times a totality of the circumstances test.
If the Hague Convention applies, then it's absolutely the case that you have reached the question of habitual residence, and I'm happy to address the court on that. In my submission, because there is an exclusive jurisdiction agreement in the allocation judgment, the consent order from the Cook County of Illinois, the court endorsed this, we don't reach that point.
Have you a case where somebody has... Oh, excuse me. David, did you want to say something?
If I could join a thought here in this debate, which is obviously critical to this case. Both you and counsel for the mother, in essence, offer rather absolute positions regarding the weight of the Illinois allocation judgment. You, in essence, argue it's conclusive, which I find hard to square with Manaski. The mother seems to argue we shouldn't pay any attention to it at all or should give it no weight at all, which suggests that the father was foolish to agree to the terms of that apparently sensible, comprehensive agreement. And I'm wondering if you might be able to offer some middle ground about the weight that stipulations about habitual residence and agreements to jurisdiction should play in later Hague Convention disputes.
Thank you, Your Honor. To take the second part of that first, if I may, the exclusive jurisdiction part, and then I will return to habitual residence. Courts across the United States, the Ninth Circuit, the First Circuit, the Fifth Circuit, and this is also the view of the United States as in an amicus brief cited and agreed with by the Ninth Circuit and Holder, have said that the parties may waive the right to return and may agree to litigate custody in a place other than the habitual residence. If that is the case, there can be no clearer example of that than an agreement to litigate in a particular place made to conclude a custody proceeding and affirmed in a court order. That is a quintessential waiver. You have the cases in the reply brief. It's Holder in the Ninth Circuit, which cites the US amicus brief. It's Nicholson in the First Circuit. That is obiter commentary, but absolutely on point here.
But counsel, I took a look at those cases before today, and those seem to deal with the concept of waiver as in at the time the removal happens, right? And so parent A is in the country with a child. Parent B comes, takes a child, moves a child to a different country, and the parent A kind of acquiesces in some way, says, gives consent, or says that's fine, or in that way, it's an affirmative defense under the Hague Convention that one party acquiesces or agrees, right? But that's not really, that's a bit different from what we have here. So let me give you an hypothetical, for example. Let's say that two parents enter into a stipulation, much like we have here, in year one. And they know, and they decide that, you know what, the parent A will take the child and they will live in another country indefinitely, okay? And they agree in year one that the country that they're at, they stipulate, will be the habitual residence of a child. Let's say 15 years goes by, 16 years, 17 years goes by, okay? The child doesn't have any familiarity with anything in the first country, right? The child's life is rooted in the new country. And you're telling us that in that fact scenario, that under the laws that you've cited, that the Hague Convention, that we should disregard Manaski and the analysis that Manaski asks us to do in favor of that stipulation that the parties entered into 16 years before the dispute arises. That would be the logical extension of your argument, would it not?
I don't think it needs to go that far.
No, but I'm saying in my hypothetical, would you take the position that in my hypothetical, that the stipulation that the parents entered into when the child was 1 year old should control where the child's habitual residence is in year 17?
Not automatically, Your Honor. The reason for that is, I'll speak in generalities and then in reference to this case, there are ways to relieve a party of a stipulation such that it no longer binds them. The parties have both referred to the Waldorf case and the factors there for relieving parties from stipulations. The allocation judgment itself clearly provides a method for altering it, and Illinois law does the same.
But what if the parties, and by altering you mean going back and getting another order, or like if there's an express agreement, what if there is no express agreement or meeting of the minds in those 16 years between the parties, right?
Yes.
And so the parties just go ahead and go on with their lives, and in year 17, all of a sudden, the parent A files a suit to have the child returned via the Hague Convention.
They would be able to resort immediately to the Waldorf test to relieve them from a stipulation that, in the interest of justice, should no longer be binding. But at any point prior, if there's not been a meeting of minds, as in my submission, Dr. Baz should have done, they can go to the court which entered that order, and in our case it's the Circuit Court of Cook County, Illinois, and seek to have the stipulation changed.
And but, so I guess, but that means the stipulation is binding on the court. And I'll just read you some language from a case called United States against Barnes, happens to have been in the sentencing area, where we said in 2010, generally stipulations are not binding on the fact finder. A stipulation is a contract between two parties to agree that a certain fact is true. As such, standard contract principles apply. A contract between the prosecutor and the defendant cannot bind a third party, the district judge, without his consent as well. There are lots of other cases that say things like that. So I guess I'm having trouble understanding why, when the court gets this Hague Convention petition and it is charged under the Hague Convention with determining which court will be the deciding body for all of these questions that are arising in this relationship, I don't see how the court's hands can be tied by something that the parties inter se have done. The court, under Manaski, has the responsibility, using perhaps as a very powerful factor the agreement between the parties. It's not irrelevant at all. It belongs in the equation, but I don't see why it ties the hands of the court.
So I take your point, Your Honor, and I might come back on my rebuttal time in relation to Barnes and a fact stipulation. But in relation to an exclusive jurisdiction agreement, courts respect exclusive jurisdiction agreements all the time. It's perfectly normal to bind parties to litigate in the forum which they've agreed to litigate.
Well, that's right. It has to be the kind of case that is subject, though, to a choice of forum clause. And as you well know, they're fine in private law matters. You can have contracts, you can have joint ventures, you can have distribution agreements, you can have all sorts of things where there are choice of forum clauses. This doesn't strike me as a private law matter.
I agree custody is going to be different from a joint distribution agreement, of course, Your Honor. But there's a reason this agreement has been made, and Your Honor, Judge Hamilton, you referred to this in your question. There's a reason that this agreement was entered. There's a reason this language is here. And if you read the section with the habitual residence fact stipulation and the exclusive jurisdiction clause, it forms a coherent scheme designed to ensure that the court, which has looked after the interests of the child in this case since they were 1 month old, will continue to do so. If that no longer worked for Dr. Baz, she should have gone to the court in Illinois and asked for a change. Instead, she went to the courts in Germany, sought a travel ban, and sought sole custody.
I'm not sure she did seek sole custody originally. I mean, it was Mr. Patterson who got the sole custody order in Illinois, unrequested, as I recall.
I can give you the site from the appendix shortly. I know I'm in my rebuttal time here, but Dr. Baz sought a travel ban on the 20th of January and then sought sole custody in Germany, and that is still pending, on the 20th of February, 2023.
Right, yeah.
Okay, that's fine.
Could I ask you, with the indulgence of my colleagues, and we may have some flexibility on the timing here. If, as I understand it, after the German consent order was entered in May of 2023, the father went back to Illinois and filed that a translation of that order with the Illinois court. Is it also correct that he was claiming that he entered into that under duress?
My understanding is that is what he said to the guardian ad litem.
Ah, okay. But, I mean, the German consent order didn't resolve very much at all.
That's right.
And can I ask you just to address, and I hope that counsel for the mother will address this issue as well, and that is what we make of the mother's, when she made that petition in February 20th of 2023, she certainly seemed to indicate that the reason she had told the Illinois court and the guardian ad litem that she was trying to establish a right to get to the United States permanently was only because she otherwise thought she was going to lose the case.
Yes,
is that?
Yes, you're right. It's in black and white in the affidavit.
And I'm concerned about several aspects of this case. One is by the district court's conclusion that going to the Illinois court, or any court for that matter, would be treated as a wrongful act under the Hague Convention, as equivalent to abducting a child. But in particular, if we're going to get into any debates in which going to court can be treated as wrongful, I'm concerned about that, both that original representation that she intended to go to Germany only temporarily, and also by the effort that she made to get sole custody in February of 2023 in the German courts.
If I can address you briefly on those, Your Honor, I'm aware of the time.
You can go ahead, and we'll give you some more rebuttal time.
I appreciate that. Thank you. It is quite clear from the affidavit that was filed in the German courts when Dr. Baz sought sole custody that she made the representations about trying to return to Illinois, not because they were true, but because she thought that's what she needed to say to keep her son with her. That's what she says to the German courts. And in my submission, and you see this in my opening brief, quite clearly suggests that the original removal in the summer of 2023, when the court allowed her to go to Germany, was procured under false pretenses. And you see the Illinois court clearly concerned about that in the way it frames the July 25th order, where it notes that she has misled the court, that she's not been
straightforward. Excuse me. I think you just said in 2023. I think you're referring to 2022, aren't you?
I apologize. I'm referring to the July 2023 order of the Illinois court, which is the preliminary
injunction. But a few minutes ago, you were referring to the original removal.
The original removal in May 22, Your Honor, yes.
Thank you. Okay, thank you.
Even if the court is not satisfied that that is a wrongful removal, it is quite clear on the district court's own reasoning and the admitted facts that by going to the German courts, she wrongfully retained their son. Indeed, Mr. Patterson was not able to exercise his visitation over spring break in April 2023 that he was meant to, because a travel ban had been put in place and she would not allow a visit. To be clear, what we have here is a situation where, having promised the Illinois court that she will deal with custody before it, that the habitual residence of her son is the United States of America, she then, when a few months have passed, goes to the German courts, and she accepted in her testimony, her own words, that she did that because she didn't want to be in two jurisdictions. Now,
thank you, counsel. I'll give you 2 minutes in rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Mr. Hoffmeier.
May it please the court. Good afternoon. My name is Sam Hoffmeier, and I represent petitioner appellee Dr. Asla Baz in this appeal. We recognize that the underlying facts of this case are difficult and emotional, and they're taxing, and they involve difficult topics like domestic violence and the decision-making regarding a six-year-old child. But the court's role here is very narrow. Judge Alonzo issued a careful, detailed, and considered order in which he correctly weighed, after a two-day evidentiary hearing, the full totality of the circumstances of this case regarding the child's life, and he determined that the child was at home in Germany when the wrongful retention took place in this case. To overturn, this court would have to find one of two things. Either that Judge Alonzo erred as a matter of law by following the Supreme Court's decision in Manaski and this court's decision in Redmond, and finding that parental agreements in Hague Convention cases, while relevant, are not controlling, or that Judge Alonzo clearly erred when considering the totality of the circumstances and the facts in this case.
Can we start then maybe with the alleged representation that Dr. Baz made that she was going to try to return to the United States, and whether she was trying to mislead the Illinois court?
Yes, Your Honor. And I want to be clear about that. Judge Alonzo considered those allegations. He was the one that was there judging the credibility of Dr. Baz testified at in the district court. Mr. Patterson testified in the district court. The guardian ad litem testified in the district court. Judge Alonzo was there to resolve this dispute about whether that was improper or not. He considered the testimony of both of those parties, and he reached the conclusion that he reached. That's a factual dispute.
Did he make a finding regarding this question of her intentions?
He did note that in his order, that he noted that was a question in this case. And I can't recall if he reached an explicit finding on that point. I would have to look at the order again. But he was fully aware that this happened, and he simply didn't believe the story. And just to back up a little bit, how we got
didn't
to
believe,
this.
Didn't believe which story?
He didn't believe the story that Dr. Baz was the wrong actor in this case.
Well, that she had misrepresented, that's the question, that she had misrepresented something to the state court.
Yes, Your Honor. And to bring it back to what Dr. Baz actually did in this case, she took every effort. She tried everything to stay in the United States back in May of 22, leading up to that, the allocation judgment that the parties entered into. Mm-hmm. She tried a variety of different visa applications and tried to stay as best as she could in the United States.
Right. I mean, she hired a lawyer. She tried a U visa, an H-1B visa, H-2B visa.
Yeah, none of that is in question.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes, Your Honor. And so that she tried to stay in the United States, and then there's been no evidence presented that she took any wrongful steps in staying in Germany. In fact, in May of 2023, both parties agreed that the child and her could remain in Germany indefinitely in the German consent order. That's the second document that we contend is important. There's the 2022 allocation judgment and the 2023 German consent order. And in that order resolved the litigation that was ongoing in both Germany and Illinois, or it was supposed to do that.
The German consent order was only very interim, right?
Your Honor, it was...
It did not agree to... both parents reaffirmed the Illinois allocation judgment, correct?
To the extent it didn't conflict with the German consent order, yes, that's right, Your Honor.
What does that mean?
Well, the German consent order was in a sense interim, but it was also the indefinite belief, and it was what the parties intended to continue on into the future, and where the child would live. He would live primarily with the mother in Germany indefinitely, and the consent order continues what the allocation judgment also said.
It carried that, and it carried the visitation schedule, and I guess what it doesn't have, and we've never seen, is something that said, you have a year to work it out in Germany, and after that, the child comes back to Illinois.
Your Honor, there's the allocation judgment as well. The 2022 allocation judgment mm-hmm. is indefinite in nature, and there's no term on that. In fact, the provisions specifically suggest that it's going to last for a period of years.
Well, that's what Judge Alonzo says at page 12 of his.
Yes, Your Honor, and if you look at the visitation that the allocation judgment provides Mr. Patterson, it says it will. He gets visitation and he gets access to the son during the school breaks. But it also says that will continue for years to come. The same schedule will apply for years to come. So it was very clearly designed, even the allocation judgment, to last a period of several years. There's a provision in the agreement that talks about when the child turns 18. I mean, it was designed to last for an extended period of time.
So, counsel, I guess to kind of echo one of the concerns that Judge Hamilton mentioned previously is that it seems like we don't want to create a system that discourages parties from trying to come to agreement with regard to custody issues, right? Mm-hmm. We want to establish a system that encourages those types of settlements and agreements. And one of the concerns I have is that here, the parties on their own or with the help of the court entered into the allocation agreement, mm-hmm. right? Instead of battling it out, which was probably the child's best interest at the time, right? And so the parties agreed to that, including the habitual residence and the forum provision, whatever legal effect it may have. And then they ordered their lives accordingly. Otherwise, one might reasonably presume that Mr. Patterson would have fought to keep AP here in the United States. And a long, drawn-out custody battle would have ensued. Similarly, when the parties entered into the German consent order, one would think that if someone had told Mr. Patterson, you know what, if you sign this, that means that AP will be in Germany for as long as Ms. Baz and AP wants, he might have some concerns about that, but for the fact that, at least to himself, he thinks, oh, you know, we agreed to habitual residence before, and so I'm okay with signing this agreement. So I guess the question that I have in my mind, and maybe along the lines of what Judge Hamilton asked, is what weight, then, are we supposed to give these private orderings, these private agreements in our analysis, even under Manaski? Mm-hmm. And how are we to think about them when it comes to cases like this?
Yes, Your Honor, and I wanted to respond to Judge Hamilton's point on that as well. If we made this, if this was the impression we left the court with in our briefs, I wanted to correct this as well. We do not take the extreme position that parental agreements should be worth nothing. They're entitled to weight, and the district court gave that the parental agreement in this case weight. Manaski specifically says that. It says parental intent, like all other factors, is entitled to some weight. So the court should factor that in, and it should probably factor that in fairly strongly. Parental intent is important in these cases, but what matters most is where the child is at home and what the status quo was when the retention occurred. And here Judge.
You got a couple of different problems with that. One is when something improper under the Hague Convention's terms happened, and whether it was the mother or father who first did that. But if we're going to give that, if you're going to give decisive weight to the year that the child spent 22 to 23 in school in Germany, primarily in school in Germany, if that gets decisive weight, that only happened under the terms of and with the consent of the Illinois court under the terms of that agreement, right?
Yes.
So what you seem to be arguing is that that agreement basically tore itself apart, but that is by allowing the mother to comply with the terms of the agreement, she undid it by establishing a habitual residence in Germany.
I don't think I'm saying that about the entirety of the allocation judgment. It does seem to take apart the habitual residence language in the allocation judgment, but the rest of the agreement stands by my position. And the parties understood that
including the mother's attempt in Germany in February of 2023 to obtain sole custody.
And if I can talk about that specifically, that was all in reaction to what happened in January 2023. Mr. Patterson he returned
the
child.
Passport.
Yeah, the passport issue. Okay. Yes, Your Honor. And so my client filed those papers in Germany because Mr. Patterson did not return the passport in January. And these are all factual issues.
Sole custody sure seems like quite an overreaction to a passport dispute.
So
under these circumstances.
At that point in time,
the parties recognized there could well be disputes, and they agreed the Illinois court would resolve them.
Your Honor, at that point in time, she had been dealing with a lot of issues. This relationship has been fraught with problems.
That's very clear. But let me try to reframe the more general question, because we can't fix our job is not to fix the relationship here. It's not your job. It's not Mr. Schaefer Goddard's job, but we do have to establish some sort of precedent here. And under these circumstances, how do we rule in your favor without making it foolish for parents, for a parent in Mr. Patterson's position, to agree to an agreement like the Illinois allocation judgment with exclusive jurisdiction and a stipulation about habitual residence.
So I have a few points on that to respond to that. One, I think the court has to follow Manaski and Redmond and has to conclude that those decisions aren't dispositive. So that's the starting point. And then in terms of what weight you give those, I think the court has to weigh those as it does any other fact in this case, in the totality of the circumstances test. The Supreme Court was clear again that parental intent is important and it should be considered. Judge Alonzo did exactly what he was supposed to do in this case. He considered the parental agreement. He considered the habitual residence language. And he reached the conclusion that notwithstanding that language, the habitual residence in this case was Germany. And he based that on the fact that the child was fully acclimated there. He spoke the language. He'd been there for a year. The parties agreed that he would be there for the majority of his time. He was at home and acclimated in the state of in the country of Germany.
Is it still possible, though? I mean, as I read the German consent order, it does largely ratify the allocation judgment. So isn't it entirely possible that a German court acting responsibly would say that it's still joint custody, that the time that AP spends with each of his parents is as provided, that, I mean, essentially carry out the intent of the parties?
I think a German court, that is a reasonable result of what a German court could do in a custody proceeding. But that's not what this court's...
I know. I mean, I'm just saying down the road, I'm not sure we've ripped up any agreements.
I agree with you.
If the German court, once we decide which forum all of this is going to be adjudicated in, anything is possible in terms of including, you know, relatively positive or moves in accordance with the parties' agreements.
I think that's absolutely right, Judge Wood. I think the courts then, once this court's role is limited, the role of this court, as you know, is to restore the parties to the status quo when the retention occurred. Then
so
what happens?
And that's, I think, one of your harder points, although both sides are arguing, as I see it, that the use of courts was the wrongful act. But, you know, we've got these three possibilities that Judge Alonzo sets forth in his opinion over on page 9 of his opinion, and he picks July 7th. Then there are other, you know, then maybe she's the one who wrongfully used the courts to retain when she went to the German court. I'm not sure anyone's hands are clean on this point.
We don't deny that. I mean, there are some, the facts are tough here. They're difficult facts, and that's why we think it is best to rely on Judge Alonzo, who looked at these facts. He judged the credibility of the witnesses. He viewed the factual...
Excuse me, Mr. Hoffmeyer, but if this can be wrongful, if it could be wrongful for the father to have gone to the court in July 7th of 23, after, as I understand it, the mother refused to turn the child over to come to the United States for the summer, as agreed and ordered by both courts. But if his going to court was wrongful, how do you justify the mother's going to court in Germany in February, several months earlier, to seek sole custody, filing an entirely new action?
So to start, Mr. Patterson didn't file a Hague Convention case, so
You do not want us to be finding that there was a waiver by failing to immediately assert a wrongful retention there.
Your Honor,
you wrote that in your brief, but that really has no traction with me, at least.
Thank you. We it's our position that all of those actions were driven by Mr. Patterson's behaviors and his actions that he took in the courts. And if the crux for us is the German consent order. That document, in that document, both parties agreed to stop litigating in Illinois, to stop litigating in Germany, and they were going to reach a global resolution. That's paragraph 5.
They were going to, but they didn't.
But the understanding of the parties at that point in time was that they would cease litigating. They said
Right. I got you. I know that's clear. So then what's the status when on June 19th, the mother fails to deliver the child to the father for summer's visitation?
So at that point in time, she made the emotional decision not to send her child there to the United States. And we acknowledge that that was contrary to the German consent order. But again,
is that not wrongful under the Hague Convention?
I don't think it is wrongful, because the determination of a wrongful retention is you take the child away, you retain the child away from the habitual residence. And so the habitual residence determination
assumes that you're assuming the conclusion then.
Your Honor, I'm assuming that they're separate and distinct arguments. And so if a retention can only be wrongful if the child is retained from the habitual residence. So if the child's habitual residence is Germany, if we are right on that, and my assumption is correct on that, then the decision in June of 2023 could not have been a wrongful retention, at least for purposes of the Hague Convention. So that issue to us rises and falls on the habitual residence determination.
Counsel, isn't the way I kind of saw the German consent order is that the parties basically looked at everything that happened to that date, including Ms. Baz's motion for sole custody, which happened before the German consent order, and said, you know what, we're just going to wipe the slate clean, right? We're just going to put everything. So whether you call it waiver or acquiescence, whatever, both sides saying, you know what, we're just going to start over, clean slate. And then these are the rules that we're going to live by, right? And one of the rules was that Mr. Patterson was to file the consent order with the German with the Illinois court, and then stop pursuing further custody battles.
Yes, Your Honor.
Is that right? Okay.
And so our view of, if I can respond to that, our view of that was when she didn't send her son to the United States 18 days after that, it was because he had clearly violated the German consent order and was no longer following what the parties had just agreed to.
He filed the order with the Illinois court, correct?
He filed a version of the order that did not, it was not the exact order. He did file a version of that. The main problem was that he continued litigating there, and he immediately...
When?
June 2nd, he started his campaign arguing that, arguing that the consent, that the German consent order was entered into under duress. That's when he made that claim, and he made it clear he was not going to abide by the German consent order at that point. He was trying to invalidate it. And of course, the district court considered that, and it rejected that claim. And to Mr. Schaefer Goddard's credit, he has not pursued that on appeal, the duress
Thank
claim.
Counsel. Anything else? Judge Hamilton, any other questions?
Let's see. Excuse me, just a moment, but I guess I would ask you, Mr. Hoffmeyer, put yourself in the position of the father's lawyer in May of 2022. It seems like the advice would have to be, don't sign this order. Don't agree to this because it's going to do you no good. Why am I wrong about that?
I don't think we're taking that extreme of a position. We're not saying that the agreement is worth nothing. It clearly denotes the party's intent, and Manaski says the party's intent is important, but it can't be the sole determining factor. So I don't think our position is quite that extreme.
Nope, that's your answer. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Schaefer Goddard, rebuttal?
I wanted to begin with rebuttal just on a couple of brief points. The passport issue. The solution was to go to the courts of Illinois, which had made the order about the passport. Mr. Patterson did exactly that the day he arrived back in the United States. The mother appeared via counsel and did not mention the passport issue. It has been said repeatedly by my colleague that the German consent order said that it would be indefinite in Germany. It didn't. It said the children would live, the child was living in Germany currently. It did not say indefinite. You've heard again from my colleague that to follow what the district court said leaves most of the allocation judgment in place. It rips the heart out of it. The stipulation as to habitual residence, the agreement to exclusive jurisdiction, the system in the allocation judgment designed to ensure that the court would continue to preside over the custody dispute.
So, Mr. Schaefer-Goddard, can I just ask you one? This is just a technical little question. I haven't heard you this afternoon argue that even if the legal test the district court was using was consistent with Manaski, et cetera, a proper legal test, the district court's findings of fact on habitual residence were clearly erroneous.
That's what I wanted to address now, if I may,
Thank
Your
you.
Honor.
Thank you.
In my submission, they were clearly erroneous for the following two clear reasons. Firstly, they failed to account in any way for the wrongful removal and wrongful retention of the child in Germany. Just as the Supreme Court of Manaski counseled that a child who is in a country because a parent is kept there under duress or coercion is relevant, so too must if the child is wrongfully kept there within the meaning of the Hague Convention. That is the first reason. The second reason is this. Judge Alonso found, and this is Appendix 10 across to 11, that the German consent order, less than a month before the alleged wrongful removal, clearly affirmed the habitual residence stipulation, where parties have, after all of that acclimatization, all of the schooling and the language and the therapists, reaffirmed where the habitual residence is, that should be what carries the day. This court needs to find a way to ensure that the Manaski test doesn't drive a coach and horses through the sorts of agreements that we want parents to reach about custody where international relocations occur. And guidance to the lower courts must be given on that. Unless I can assist the court any further.
Judge Hamilton, anything else?
Thank you, no.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
The case